Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we are pleased to have with us the Reverend Ignacio Castuera. He is the National Chaplain for Planned Parenthood Federation of America. He's visiting Central Illinois to give several talks in front of several groups. And the general topic that we will be discussing during this hour of the show is religion's role in human sexuality, and we'll see where that leads during the conversation. And I'm sure we'll talk about his role with Planned Parenthood, etc. And also mention several times, I will start out by doing that, that our guest, Reverend Ignacio Castuera, will be speaking tonight at the Planned Parenthood of East Central Illinois Gala. That is tonight at 6 p.m. Starts at 6 p.m. with a social hour and 7 p.m. dinner tonight at the Levis Faculty Center on the campus of the University of Illinois. Also speaking tomorrow evening at the Planned Parenthood of East Central Illinois Gala in Bloomington, and that is at the Le Chateau, formerly the Jumers Castle Lodge there in Bloomington. And again, that is starting at 6 p.m. Tomorrow evening in Bloomington. And I'll mention that a couple of the times. He's been also pretty busy before getting to us, so hopefully he's not worn out and we can have a good conversation. As we do that, we invite you to call us if you have questions. You're welcome to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest or online anywhere in the continental U.S., 800-222-9455. Well, thanks so much for being here.
It's good to be here. I'm glad to see a copy of the book that I helped put together several years ago.
And I should have mentioned that. Well, this is a book, and the book is entitled Dreams on Fire, Embers of Hope from the Pulpits of Los Angeles After the Riots. And I also failed to mention your role as a pastor in that area. I had the information here at the time at St. John's United Methodist Church in the Watts area of Los Angeles and currently at the Trinity United Methodist Church in Pomona, California.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's really great to be here, and it helps correct misconceptions about religion and specifically Planned Parenthood, family planning, mm-hmm. and issues like that. We have a very vocal minority that is trying to give religion really a bad name, as far as I'm concerned, as an oppressive force in relationship to sexuality and to family planning. Protestantism in particular has been very supportive of family planning. And Protestant leaders, along with Jewish rabbis, were very helpful to Margaret Sanger as she started a movement that would strengthen the possibilities for women to be empowered. She understood very well that women with a lot of children just have very few other opportunities to do something in society. And so if they were going to fulfill themselves, they had to go beyond just being mothers. Not that being mother is a negative thing or a trivial matter. It's absolutely essential, of course. But, you know, children do grow up, and then what do these former mothers, or still mothers, but not mothering anymore, what do they do? And she understood that. And that's why she tried to help women by educating them and also by letting them know that there were means through which they could space the rate of the birth of the children, as well as limit the number of children they would have. Mm-hmm. And so she reached out to Jewish and Protestant pastors so that we could help to balance the power, because she was primarily at that time against Roman Catholics who do not believe, or some of whom, many of whom at the official level, do not believe in family planning. Although at the practical level, we know that the majority of Catholics do use some kind of method of birth control. So the churches themselves, and even those churches that appear to have some restrictive role, are not successful in reaching their own members and convincing them not to use birth control. Mm-hmm. So I am here primarily, and I go around the country, trying to help people understand that there are many nuances that they need to make themselves aware of in relationship to how religion and sexuality in general and how religion and family planning relate to each other, and how people of faith and Planned Parenthood have been partners for a long, long time and not the enemies that they appear at this time. Mm-hmm.
When we talk about religion and human sexuality and family planning and reproduction, obviously there are a lot of different religions with a lot of different viewpoints.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why I'd like to, I think in a couple of these lectures that I will be talking about, I'd talk more about spirituality or religion rather than specifically Christianity or Judaism. I'm glad you pointed out that religions have various points of views. One that informs me, at least in terms of a more enlightened understanding of sexuality, is Hinduism, for instance, where one of the religious practices very much relates to sexuality, and that's Kundalini Yoga. You know, it's not something that is outside of the sphere of religion in Hinduism. It's part and parcel of what it means to be a practicing Hindu. And also they have, I think they have a much healthier attitude towards sexuality. And they talk about their chakras, and the base chakra is the one that is located in that part of the body where our sexual organs are located also. And that is the base chakra. And then from there, they look at the rest of the body, but they do not ignore the sexual organs, and they do not just simply call them reproductive organs. They are also sexual organs, which then helps us see that it is not for just reproduction, you know. So, and then you move to other religions that, unfortunately, because of some historical reason, began repressing sexuality. And what might have been valuable at a certain time because of other religious practices that included sexuality that was not respectful of human beings, that included temple prostitution, for instance. The Christians then, of course, began to pronounce themselves against that. And then eventually that appeared as though that's the teaching, you know, the repression of the body and the repression of sexuality. Mm-hmm. That's the only teaching for the centuries, you know, and that is just not the case. I think we need to look at all of the body of literature of the Christian and Jewish faith to discover that, in fact, there are all kinds of interesting and powerful, from my perspective, texts that deal with human sexuality.
Yeah, I think some of the biblical scholars who have gone back and other scriptures as well, gone back to original sources, have found, would argue that other interpretations would be made, mm-hmm, of a lot of the things that seem to restrict women in particular, mm-hmm, in their role in society.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I believe firmly that any religion that does not strengthen the role of women, that does not support equality for women, is a religion that needs to be opposed. And fortunately, the majority of the main religions of the world support women. A colleague of mine, a very good friend, a Jesuit, teaches at Marquette University. He's no longer a priest, but he is a Jesuit forever and ever in many ways. Dan McGuire wrote a wonderful book called Sacred Choices, and he points out that in 10 of the world's primary religions, there are these wonderful statements about supporting a woman's right to choose. And that's what we really need to emphasize, that extreme groups may select just a little portion and then elevate that to ultimacy and say women, therefore, have to be restrained and constrained and controlled. Mm-hmm. While, in fact, if we start out with the idea that we are created in God's image, then not only males are created in God's image, but women are also created in God's image, and they need to have the same capacity for fulfillment and possibility for fulfillment that men have.
It seems that we are, at least in the Christian tradition, I'm thinking of the reaction to the Da Vinci Code, for example. Mm-hmm. So many people feel so threatened by the idea the idea in the Da Vinci Code, which I thought was an okay novel. I mean, it was kind of entertaining. My own reaction, just, you know, one person, I I didn't think it was earth-shaking or particularly. It was a novel, folks. It was fiction, you know. But the reaction to it was amazing because, churches discussed it, and we had a lot of people arguing about it, and this almost blasphemous idea that maybe I shouldn't say what that idea is in case you haven't read the book yet. But you get what I'm saying.
Well, I think we ought to mention that because I think it's absolutely essential to say that, to suggest that Jesus engaged in sexual activity. That's really the bottom line of the reason for the opposition is, oh, what blasphemy. What does it really say if you think it's blasphemous to imagine that Jesus might have had sexual relationships with a woman? There have been other more blasphemous suggestions in other parts of the world that didn't make it into a book but made it into a film, and that is the suggestion that Jesus was a sexual being, but his sexuality was homosexual. I mean, that happened in other parts of the world, right? I can see why people would get a little bit more bent out of shape about that, but what does it say to women if you think that the fact that Christ might have had sexual relationships with a woman is a blasphemy? It says women are horrible. They shouldn't be touched. The Son of God would not touch a woman, would not be intimate with a woman. I think that's ridiculous. And one of the things that was very interesting in reaction to the Da Vinci Code was an interview that ABC did with a professor at Notre Dame, of all places, a Roman Catholic priest. And she asked, what do you think about the possibility that Jesus might have been married? And he said, we cannot prove it and we cannot disprove it. It wouldn't surprise me and it wouldn't hurt my faith. But then he went on to say, the most important thing I think he went on to say is, but how different would the history of the church have been if he had had sexual relationships with women? You know? And I think that's really the key. And by the way, I actually like the Da Vinci Code. If people haven't read it, go out and get it. I couldn't put it down. It's a mystery, and like you said, it's a novel, and it's a mystery, and it was. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. It was good.
Yeah, and that it doesn't mean that everything that is suggested there is true, but what has happened now, as more and more people keep on digging, is that a lot of the suggestions that are made throughout the book, not specifically the suggestion that Jesus might have been married or might have had sexual relations, but other kinds of things about the history of religion are verified by good scholarship. And so to me, it's anything that can send people back to read the Bible and to read history and to acquaint themselves a little bit more with the wonderfully nuanced history of religions, that's good. So I thank good God for the Da Vinci Code, both the book and the movie.
Okay. Well, let me just mention again that our guest this morning during this hour of Focus 580 is the Reverend Ignacio Castuera. He is the National Chaplain for Planned Parenthood Federation of America. He's visiting Central Illinois to speak tonight at the Levis Faculty Center. That event gets underway at about 6 o'clock, and that's the local Planned Parenthood chapter for East Central Illinois' annual gala. Also tomorrow night in Bloomington at the former Jumers, I can't remember the name of the new place it is. I will
Le
find
Chateau
it here. Le Chateau. It's French now. in Bloomington.
Must be good then.
yeah, it's a very nice place, actually. 6 p.m. social hour, 7 p.m. dinner tomorrow night in Bloomington. And if you want to join our conversation, you are welcome to do so around Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. Toll free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Let me ask you a question that it's kind of one of these broad, maybe kind of dumb guy questions. Where do we get this idea, especially in, maybe the Christian tradition, which is I come from the Christian tradition, mm-hmm. so I'm more familiar with that. And other traditions may see this differently, but it does seem that within the Christian tradition we have this idea that sex is not something we talk about. It's a very private thing, even though it has very public implications.
Mm-hmm. Very good question. I believe that what happened is what I began hinting at the beginning, that Christianity originated in the middle of religious cults that included temple prostitution and also encourage other kinds of sexual activities. And so the first thing that we must remember about the origins of Christianity is that the early Christians did not expect the world to last very long. That's almost axiomatic. When you look at the work of the Apostle Paul, he expected Jesus to return during his own lifetime. There are texts that indicate he really expected Jesus to return to during his own lifetime. So he really didn't worry too much about teaching anything about sexual purity or impurity forever, but only for his own particular time. And chances are, and certainly Spong suggests, that he was conflicted about his own sexuality. And he thought that we shouldn't even worry about sexuality. Let's just prepare ourselves for the return of the Lord. Interestingly enough, 19 centuries later, the Shakers did the same thing. Now, the Shakers at least were smart enough or consistent enough to say, since the Lord is coming, we're not going to have sex, and they disappeared, you know, which then solved every problem right there, right? So, but what happened is, indeed, the Lord did not return, and in fact, a lot of the literature in the New Testament begins to correct that impression that the Lord is going to return very soon, and to make sure that people understand that Paul wasn't that wrong, that God has a different sense of time that humans have, and all of these other kinds of things. And then what began appearing as a temporary kind of thing begins to be seen as an eternal kind of thing. And then you have Augustine, who talk about someone who was conflicted about his own sexuality. First, he was an absolutely depraved guy. I mean, he anything that moves kind of a guy almost, you know, and his poor mother, Monica, praying for him, you know, to be converted and all that. He was with the Manichaeans for a long time and then comes into Christianity. And then he has spent all of his libido, and then he wants to impose on everybody else, you know, the rules that he's imposing on himself. And I think that, you know, it just keeps the ball keeps on rolling, and the, you know, it just it snowballs and it just gets bigger and bigger. And of course, then we get into the institutionalization of the church, which then has clergy and eventually celibate clergy. The requirement for celibacy was not there from the very beginning. It's something that creeps in later on in history. And so all of that then begins to say, well, sex is dirty. I mean, essentially, the message of Christianity has been, you can distill it to what a friend of mine says, sex is dirty, save it for someone you love. You know, I mean, it seems to be like, wow, you know, that's what we... what we're really saying. But when you look at the scriptures and you look at the beginnings of our documents, you know, we have this wonderful Song of Solomon, for instance, you know, praising the human body and praising the human sexuality. So, you know, wherever it started, and then of course it was connected with original sin and all of these other kinds of things, which it isn't. I mean, when you really look at the text carefully, it is just not there.
We have a call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. Others are welcome to join us, 333-9455. That's the Champaign Urbana number. Outside the 217 area code, toll-free 800-222-9455. An Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
You took my punchline. The sex is dirty, you should save it for the one you love. I would say the other message is that it causes disease. And I think it's really interesting that we don't have a vaccine against gonorrhea or against syphilis, you know, against these sexually transmitted diseases. It's a whole lot more fun to try to scare people off from having intercourse by holding these bugaboos over people's heads. We just read a book in our book group this month and discussed it last night, and it happens to be by a local author. It's called Nina Adolescence. Adolescence refers to the title of a painting done of a young girl by her mother. It's a very complex story and very, very well done and well written. And one of the things that happens is that Nina is gradually, over the course of multiple interactions, gradually seduced by an older man. Now, a lot of teenagers, young women, get pregnant by an older man. And I don't think we spend enough time talking with our sons and daughters and the people we interact with about how do you avoid being used? How do you avoid the traps that people set for you, the manipulation that sometimes goes on? How do you avoid the jerks and the jerkettes? And it's not just the ones that you might be having premarital sex with. You can also marry one and end up with a terrible time.
Exactly.
So when I see billboards that say, that show a wedding, and it says the only safe sex, I want to say to people, what?
No.
You know, I've heard of so many people who have been abused.
Exactly.
Who caught, sexually transmitted diseases from their spouse, mm-hmm. who's been wandering. I don't think the kind of stuff that I'm hearing from the abstinence-only people, it doesn't nearly cover the information that people really, really need to have a healthy sexuality and to have healthy relationships mm-hmm. in their adult life. And somehow we're all supposed to not masturbate and not have sex and somehow be multi-orgasmic and satisfy our spouse once we get married.
Yeah.
And heaven help you if you happen to be gay, then you know, you're just totally out beyond the pale. So anyway, those are my thoughts.
Well, thank you very much. This is Ignacio Castora, and I'm responding a little bit to what you're saying in that it is unfortunate that pastors do not speak about sexuality from the pulpit. I met yesterday with a wonderful group of African-American pastors in Springfield, and I was urging them to speak about sexuality from the pulpit because I said, how can you expect parents to talk with their children around the kitchen table about sexuality if you do not speak about sexuality from the pulpit in a healthy way? And I think that we should have sex education in the churches. And there, those people, as far as the religious right is concerned, I invite the religious right to also speak about sexuality in their own pulpits and in their own churches, teach their own kids their values, and then Planned Parenthood will take care of their strays. You know, because I know that most people stray from the teachings of their own religion. We know that at least at some level, the Catholic Church teaches that you're not supposed to use any contraception. But we also do know that the majority of Roman Catholics use contraception. And many of them get their contraceptives through Planned Parenthood, especially if they are in the poorer end of the spectrum. So it seems to me that religious organizations have an obligation to teach their values to their own people from the pulpit if possible, and then let those other organizations like Planned Parenthood take care of those people that act on the basis of their own conscience and want to get ways of staying healthy and have healthy sexuality.
Okay, well, we have another caller waiting. We'll talk with them, another Urbana listener, line number 2. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. This is a question for Dr. Quistera. The Al Gore movie that recently came out, An Inconvenient Truth, has people now understanding more the impact of industrial consumption on the environment? And I'd like to know, what is religion's role in protecting the environment relative to the world's population?
Thank you very much. The Catholic Church and many of the Protestant bodies have issued strong statements in defense of the environment. I know as a United Methodist, my bishops have issued a letter in defense of the environment. And what people need to also do is connect the defense of the environment with awareness about population. I go back as early as 1973 to a conference that we held in Claremont, California, called the Alternatives to Catastrophe Conference, a conference that was motivated by the report to the Club de Roma that indicated that if population kept on increasing at the rate it was, we might not make it past 2021. So it seems to me that that it behooves us, as people of faith, to defend the environment, but also to show how to defend the environment. And one of the ways in which we do defend the environment is by limiting the size of the population, by limiting the size of our families, especially in the North Atlantic countries. The United States and Europe, when a child is born in any of those countries, that child is going to impact the environment far more than 10 children that are born in the third world. So it seems to me that we need to, that's not to say the third world should be having 10 children, but it's simply saying that we need to be very much aware of the connection between the protection of the environment and the dissemination of adequate information about sexuality, and to really help people understand that sexuality and reproduction, though related, do not fill all of the possible uses of our sexuality in a healthy way. So, you know, to limit sexuality to reproduction is absolutely against the design. You know, some of these people that talk about intelligent design ought to look at the design. We are sexually interested 24/7. So that means sex is for something else other than for reproduction. Because if we had been made for only for reproduction, if our sexuality had been made only for our reproduction, you know, the creator, the intelligent designer, if you want to, already had done that with dogs, with cats, with cattle. But with humans, we were given this gift. Some might even look at it as a burden. I look at it as a gift. And the majority of the denominations, Protestant denominations, start statements on sexuality, or at least include in their statements of sexuality, that sexuality is a gift from God. And so what is this gift for? I don't know. But I know for sure it is not only for reproduction. It's also for intimacy and other kinds of things.
I wonder what you would say to the notion that, you know, religion, and this is probably a contested idea, that the religion in general, and maybe particular religions would take up this issue differently, it has a couple of different concerns. One is, you know, the afterlife in whatever sense, obviously, and different visions or versions of an afterlife depending on different religions. But also the here and now, this place we inhabit, this time where we are, and our behavior and our wellness and our relationships and our spirituality in the here and now. And as that here and now changes, we're now, you know, we're just talking about population. We have 6 going on 7 billion human beings on this planet. That wasn't always the case. It wasn't always a problem that the world was overpopulated, or that we were, by our industrial processes, perhaps doing great harm to our ability to survive the next century. You know, these are large here and now issues that the church, many churches, have a voice in addressing. And yet it seems that many churches are still trying to find a way to transition from you know, an older earth to the present one. And I don't mean to demean anyone's religion by saying that. I certainly, you know, I don't have the answer to this. I'm just kind of posing the question. What would you think about that?
Very good. I think that the belief in the afterlife cuts two ways. And we have seen it already. I mean, it either becomes a way of saying it really doesn't matter what's going on over here because it's in the other side that our real world lies. Right. So let this earth go to hell, and the sooner the better. And in fact, some people on the religious right and are saying that, you know, the sooner we get rid of this earth, the better off. The apocalyptic images of people who say, it's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, in the Middle East, that's where it's going to happen, you know, and you have apocalyptic images from Christianity and apocalyptic images from Islam, both of which say, let's get rid of this world so that then the new Messiah will come, the third prophet will come, if it is Islam. And, you know, so you have these conflicting apocalyptic visions with a better, supposedly a better world on the other end. The other way in which a belief in resurrection or afterlife can function is as an energizing force to do the things that need to be done over here. And there are plenty of texts in the scriptures that say, keep on working because you don't know when it's going to happen. Even if you do believe that that will happen, you don't know when it's going to happen. So just keep on working as if it's going to go on forever, in a sense. And not only that, but the belief in resurrection, in particular in the Christian faith, is one that should not be wasted. Such a great belief should energize us to tackle the most difficult of enemies, whether it's the religious right, whether it is the neocons, whatever it is. And as we do that, it's good to protect the earth that is also God's creation. We're not the only creation of God. And in fact, I would challenge and I would urge my colleagues in religion, and specifically in the Judeo-Christian and Islamic side of religion, to look again at the story of creation and not to get hung up on the 6 days of creation or 7 days of creation, which includes the Sabbath rest, and whether or not it was 24 hours or whether that works against evolution or what. But what does it say about the relationship between humans and the rest of creation? And what I do believe that it does say about the relationship between humans and creation is that we are one together. That as one goes, so goes the whole thing. And the fact that we have the story of creation where Adam is taken out, is made out, is molded out of the dirt, out of the earth, out of the clay, indicates the interdependence between human beings and the rest of the environment, so that if the environment goes, we go too. So any kind of threat to the environment would be bad for us. And that's a utilitarian perspective. But I want to add to the utilitarian perspective what I think is the superior perspective, which is also found in the scriptures, in the 24th Psalm that says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein." It doesn't say the earth is the corporations. The earth belongs to the super wealthy. The earth belongs to whoever is stronger and can dominate others. It says the earth is the Lord's. And if we treat the earth as indeed being owned, so to speak, by the one who created us all, then we would treat it with the respect and with the attention and with the honor that it deserves in and of itself, not only because of what it does for me. So there are the two, and I want to use both, and I want to point out that they're both important. One, the utilitarian one that says, gosh, if that goes, you go. And the other that says, you shouldn't just do it on the basis of that. This tree is important in and of itself. It's not only because it's providing a shade for you and oxygen for you, but it is important because it is also a creature of God. God created it. So it's a much larger kind of thing. And then, again, to connect it with the issues of sexuality, that also means you shouldn't have as many children because, you know, that might mean you have to cut this tree in order to make another house for that other little children or a crib or something like that. So then we see ourselves interacting with all of nature instead of just being the lords of creation and the dominators of creation, having everything under us and for our own pleasure and utilization. You know,
we have just about 15 minutes left with our guest, Reverend Inacio Castuera. He is the National Chaplain of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. He's here visiting Central Illinois to speak tonight at the East Central Illinois Planned Parenthood annual gala. That's at the Levis Faculty Center on West Illinois Street, you know, on the campus of the University of Illinois. And if you want to contact Planned Parenthood, I'm sure that there are tickets available. Also tomorrow evening in Bloomington at Le Chateau, the former Jumer's Castle Lodge. I can't stop thinking of it that way. Anyway, that's in Bloomington tomorrow evening starting at 6 p.m. if you'd like to attend that. Also the Planned Parenthood of East Central Illinois event up there. And if you want to join us during this hour of Focus 580 in the time remaining, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We have another Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I think you speak very movingly, Reverend, about the environment, and I certainly agree with most of what you're saying. But if you are working for Planned Parenthood, you surely support legalized abortion. And I'm a little saddened to hear you talk about the rights of trees and yet have apparently little regard for the rights of unborn human beings.
Well, my position is not inconsistent because my regard for human beings starts with my regard for a woman who finds herself in a predicament with an unanticipated pregnancy. That's where it really starts for me. And out of respect for her and her capacity to make moral decisions on her own without my having to impose on her my own particular views, that is absolutely consistent with everything I have said about treating a tree with respect and treating a woman with respect. People will argue about when life begins, when human life begins specifically. But there's no argument about a poor woman usually who's in front of me, you know, white knuckles and all, saying, I can't have this eighth baby. You know, you know, it's an issue of justice. Wealthy women in El Salvador today, El Salvador has the worst abortion laws in Latin America. Wealthy women, poor women end up in jail or dead in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. Wealthy women go on shopping sprees to Miami, have their abortion and come home to El Salvador without any problem. Mm-hmm. And that also was happening before Roe v. Wade was passed, where wealthy women, you know, were sent by their parents to Switzerland or Japan or wherever it was, while the poor woman had to either go and get an illegal abortion and sometimes die from that, or sometimes start an abortion and go to the county hospital and hopefully make it over there, because the county hospital had to finish the process of the abortion. There were wards in county hospitals that were never empty before Roe v. Wade, where women were in gurneys in the hallways waiting for an intervention because they had either used a coat hanger or needles or something in their desperation and their poverty, while their wealthy sisters were having a much easier time flying around the world to a place where it was safe, or simply going to a physician they knew that, and this physician knew that they were going to keep their mouth shut, and this physician knew that they could pay the high price of an abortion at that time. Mm-hmm. So it is an issue of justice and of respecting women. Also, so that you're here as this other reality, Planned Parenthood did not start out offering abortion services.
Yes, I know that.
Planned Parenthood was nudged, first nudged, interestingly enough, by pastors.
Yeah.
A group of pastors started ahead of Planned Parenthood. And then, later on, Planned Parenthood got into that and then had to get even more into that because the vociferous and aggressive religious right was closing independent clinics right and left, and only Planned Parenthood had the legal resources, the monetary resources, and the credibility in the community to open those clinics and survive.
But listen, if women are having abortions because they are so poor that they can't afford another child, are we really talking about choice in any legitimate sense of the word, or are they being forced into abortions by the circumstances in which they live? Surely a more positive approach would be to work on alleviating the poverty and alleviating the situations in society that cause women.
Very good point. Very good point. But unfortunately, a moot point at this time, because in reality, we have a society that has actually a degrading economy that is going to make it worse. I came into the United States in 1960. I'm originally from Mexico. In 1960, there were less poor people than now. In 1947, a State Department memo circulated by a gentleman by the last name of Kennon, K-E-N-N-O-N, 1947. And this memo said we have 6%, 6.3% of the population and own basically 50% of the resources. It behooves us to keep this percentage the same way, while at the same time making sure that our national security remains. And so that situation that you're speaking about, the theoretical situation of really fixing everything so that women can have all the children that they can possibly have and really have, quote, choice in the fullest sense of the word, I don't think that's a viable situation at this time in history. The reality is that we have such savage inequalities, to quote Jonathan Cassol's title of a book, such savage inequalities that, in fact, poor women do not have the opportunity to do what you were just suggesting.
We have just about 10 minutes left with our guest, Reverend Ignacio Castuera. He's a national chaplain of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, and we do have one caller waiting and in Urbana, and we welcome others if you'd like to join us in the time remaining, although it's growing short. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. An Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
It's me again. I was just talking to you, and I got cut off.
Okay.
I wanted to point out that the United States has one of the highest abortion rates among industrialized countries in the world. There are plenty of other countries, like the Netherlands and France, where abortion is much more affordable and accessible, and yet has a fraction of the rate.
Thank you for pointing that out. And
so
you know the reason, too?
It's possible that a society like ours could provide the resources for women who are pregnant or don't want to be pregnant, but could give them the resources that would help them avoid abortion.
Absolutely. You know the reason for that? The real reason for that is that they do not have a religious right over there that prevents them from advertising aggressively and educating in a most comprehensive way to their young people over there. I just came back from Berlin. I was there for the World Cup, and then later on I went back for a baptism. You can see signs for condoms all over the place, and they have the most educated young people. Their young people start sex relations at about the same time as our own young people, but they have the wherewithal not to get an unanticipated pregnancy.
Yeah, I am no friend of the religious right, believe me.
You don't sound like one, but I just wanted to point out to all of the listeners that's the reason.
I think there are certainly problems with the religious right. I think there's also a problem in this country that we have rejected all forms of anything that we could consider socialist, and we reject any government interference, and that leads to things like a privatized healthcare system.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Thank you. I think that on that we would be of absolutely one mind. We really need to have a system. Let's not use the word socialist because of all of the reasons that you were saying, but a guaranteed healthcare at least through 21, you know, as they did in Vermont. And look how cheap it is to do it in Vermont. And look how much healthier their 21 to 61 then become. So the solutions are here, but we have, you know, strong forces against those solutions. The neocons own Mein Kampf, which is called the Project for the New American Century, states quite clearly that they don't want any of these things happening.
Yeah. No, it's a problem, but I don't see any of that justifying abortions. I do think that you can't really argue that abortion does anything other than destroy a human life.
No, I disagree with that, and that's where the issues of values and religious values come out. That, I mean, it doesn't destroy a person. Certainly, if it happens within the first 3 months, if you read a book like Dombrowski's, who's a Roman Catholic, teaches at a Jesuit university. If you read his book, A Brief Liberal Catholic Defense of Abortion, you will see that within Catholic teachings, there are strong differentiations between a fetus in the early stages and a fetus after the time of what is called awakening. I would have a difficult time, obviously, if I were a woman myself. Thank God I don't have to face that. So that's why I leave the agency in the hands of moral human beings.
I hope the caller will forgive me. We do have another caller waiting, and we're growing very short on time. I do want to include our last caller here, someone on line number four. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Now, I'm sorry I'm jumping away from the idea of abortion, but earlier in the conversation it seemed appropriate to discuss that the work of Weston A. Price, in case you're acquainted with him. He was a dentist from Cleveland at the turn of the century, went around the world and studied indigenous cultures before they were impacted by commercial products. And he found over and over again that these indigenous cultures had means, natural means of controlling how many
Absolutely.
Children a family would.
Absolutely.
You know, and before Catholicism came along and suddenly this intellectual
yes.
concept was imposed
right.
that you shouldn't.
Absolutely.
That was just, I guess, to recruit a lot of people for the Catholic Church.
If you wouldn't mind sending me information, I am not familiar with that gentleman's name, and if you could send information maybe to the
station,
to
here,
the station
send
here.
To me if you want.
Yeah, that would be great. If that could,
okay.
And then you could forward it to me. Let me just make a PS on that very quickly because our time is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was precisely observations such as that one that led to the pill. Because a Roman Catholic physician observed Mexican women chewing on a root, a tuberous, I think some kind of a yam. I forget now exactly all of the details. And this Roman Catholic physician developed the pill, and he had every reason to expect that the church was going to approve it. And he died a very disappointed Roman Catholic.
Oh.
You know, I think Roman Catholics and conservative Christians need to know that the native cultures had wisdom that then was collected by the West and was made available through the pill, but that the oppressive forces within the Catholic Church, not all of the Catholic Church is oppressive, but oppressive forces within the Catholic Church then have tried to keep this away from women. They have not succeeded in the United States, but they have succeeded in the poorer countries where people with less education just, bow down to the priest and say, okay.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for letting
thank
me
you,
put
also.
My input.
Thanks for the call. We have just about 3 minutes left. The issue of contraception just came up, I think, in our last exchange also. It's, again, something that one can take a different position on, obviously. People do. It is distinct in many people's minds from abortion. And I guess I'm wondering, if there's a role for the church to inform, educate, enlighten, not just about, sexuality, but also, the health aspects mm-hmm. of our sexuality.
Thank you. Yes, I think it is imperative on the churches to continue educating on the issues of contraception, because the religious right's real target is contraception. It's not just abortion. And then one really unmasks the real issue. The real issue is that the religious right is afraid of strong women. And women who can control their own sexuality and their own reproductivity are strong women, and they're deadly afraid of them.
Well, we're just about at the point that we're going to have to stop. I will mention again our guest, the Reverend Ignacio Castuera, the National Chaplain for Planned Parenthood. He will be speaking tonight at the East Central Illinois Chapter of Planned Parenthood Annual Gala. That's at the Levis Faculty Center, 919 West Illinois Street in Urbana. This gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight. And tomorrow night at in Bloomington, again, a Planned Parenthood event at Le Chateau, 1601 Jumer Drive in Bloomington. And again, that's 6 p.m. tomorrow evening. Our guest, Reverend Ignacio Castuera, is also pastor of Trinity United Methodist Church in Pomona, California. And I'll mention the book also that you author, Dreams on Fire, Embers of Hope, from the pulpits of Los Angeles after the riots. A very different topic, but certainly one that is important if you would like to take a look at it. And to you, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much also. And even though it appears to be a different topic, the issue is justice and the injustices committed against women and against the poor, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not that far from our topic.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.